Let's do the 60-second savings challenge. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link your accounts and see every subscription you're paying for. Tap one you don't use and cancel it. That's money back every month. Step three, create a financial goal. $50 every paycheck. Or let the app automatically move small amounts of cash when you can afford it. In a week, you'll forget you set it up. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you've saved. Bonus challenge. Upload an internet or phone bill and let Rocket Money try to lower it. You only pay if they find you savings. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. Make saving money the resolution you actually keep. Start the 60-second savings challenge at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.
We're into week three, and things are starting to make sense here at Sutton Hoo.
Will this magical place finally give up its secrets?
Find out on this episode of the Time Team podcast.
And welcome to our third episode from Sutton Hoo. We're at the side of the trench and we have an audience. Hello, audience! Yay! These are some of the people who have joined us here and who are watching from this sort of vantage point over the trench, which, since I last saw it a week ago, is much deeper, is much bigger. Things have really been coming on here.
They have, yes. We've been having the troweling line doing coarse troweling at a slightly higher level than you can see where last year's trench was taken out, so that we can try to see features as we go down. We're still going down very, very slowly, but we're not just now looking for finds. Because the colours are different, we will be able to see some features in this soil. So you can see the stripes, the diagonal stripes that are cut into it up at this level, and we can also see the ring ditch, which appears to also be cut into it.
And just explain, what's a ring ditch?
Well, should we have a little wander up?
Yes, we can wander. We'll be back, audience. You stay there. We're just going
to go further down. Audience can see what we're talking about. So we have a pale pinkish brown, light brown.
Oh, I can see it now. Yeah,
it's drying out differentially. It's not just a different colour, it's also drying out slightly differently. And then in the middle of the ring ditch, there is the base of a cremation urn, which is still containing cremated bones. But we've put a tiny little sandbag over the top of that to protect it until Jackie's here on Thursday and she can excavate it. And you'll see the other thing everybody notices is this swish of yellow.
Yes, that's strange. Yeah. Yeah.
That's an animal burrow. It's probably a mole that's gone along and somehow pulled in clean, yellow, natural subsoil into this buried soil through the ring ditch. And it's very obvious, but it's not human, so we're not interested in it.
So that cremation vessel that is being protected by the sandbag, that is really interesting. And if you were watching our live on YouTube that we did with Sir Tony Robinson a few days ago, you'll know all about that and how exciting that is. So we shall return to talking about that in just a moment. But first, I want to just return to our assembled audience here. Let's have another cheer from the audience, please. Sound like you're happy to be here. Hello! Hey! Let's have a few little chat with some of the people who are here and a few children coming along, which is great. Hello, what's your name?
Isaac.
You're Isaac and?
Joel.
Isaac and Joel, great to see both of you. I'm looking at this line of people here in this trench. They're all in high-vis. They're all scraping away with their trowels. What do you make of what's going on here, Isaac?
People are digging up stuff.
Yeah, and can you see if they've managed to find anything yet? What do you think they're trying to look for?
A helmet.
Helmets
would be amazing.
Helmet would be pretty exciting.
Helmets, to be fair, they can often break into thousands of tiny pieces. So it's not as ridiculous as you might think. We might find a tiny little piece of a helmet. You never know.
Let me see who else is here at Sutton Hoo. Come to have a little chat. Hello, can I have a quick chat with you? What's your name?
My name's Louise.
And who are you here with?
My husband.
Hello.
And my daughter.
And your daughter. So you came here as a bit of a family trip. What do you make of turning up to Sutton Hoo and finding an enormous archaeological excavation going on right in front of your eyes?
We came on purpose.
You came specifically for this. So what? Yes. Why did you want to see this in action?
Well, we love Time Team. Lots.
Thank you. You're saying all the right things.
And I've watched it since I was little. I love it. And we've wanted to come to Sutton Hoo for a very, very long time. So we thought this would be the perfect opportunity.
Brilliant. Well, we're so glad that you're here and you can stick around and enjoy and try and make sense of some of what we're doing here. And that's what this podcast is all about, trying to give you a little bit of context, explain a little bit what's going on. So let's get into it then, Helen, and talk a little more about what has changed, what we're now starting to understand about this site that we're investigating here at Sutton Hoo. This came in from Phoebe, who is another child actually, who was here a few days ago and wanted to know a little bit more about the cremation vessel that we've been finding here. And Phoebe apparently, according to her parents, had a wonderful time watching the live episode that we did in person. And she says, is the cremated bone that you found human or animal?
Ah, okay. So Phoebe and anybody else who watched the live will have seen us talking about this one in the ring ditch here. And at the moment, we don't know if that's human or animal or both. Now, the part of the cemetery that's under the visitor centre, there wasn't quite as much animal bone as you might expect in the cremations there. It was mainly human. And from what I've seen, that looks to me like perfectly ordinary human cremated bone. But then, you see, I'm not a bone specialist. Even Jackie is a human bone specialist. You need a great suite of bone specialists and specialists in everything to be able to understand these. So that was that one there. But then if you look over there at the one that has been lifted or largely lifted, we noticed that at the bottom there were some very, very big pieces of bone. And those look to me, with my untutored eye, as if they might be large chunks of animal bone. But I don't know. We'll have to wait until the specialist has looked at it.
So the short answer, Phoebe, is we don't know, but we have some idea. We know the people who will be able to tell us for definite as well, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, so it's not that we don't know, it's that we don't know yet.
That's more like it. Thank you so much for your questions, by the way. If you want to support us on Patreon, patreon.com/timeteamofficial, we can't do it without you. And if you are a member, you get to ask a question. And that's exactly what Phoebe's done. It's what loads of other people have done as well. And we will get to more of your questions from here at Sutton Hoo in just a second. Just to give you a little sense of where we are right now, we are standing right in the middle of the biggest trench that we're working on site at the moment. And away to my right, I can see Time Team's dome. I'm going to be going there in just a bit. But right now, I'm going to very carefully make my way around the other side of the trench to go in there and speak to some of the volunteers. So Helen, while I'm doing that, you just sort of set where we are in a bit more context and take us on a little tour, if that's all right.
Well, I think the best thing to do is to explain to you and show you that there's more than one trench here. So we're going to come out of the enclosure around trench one, and I'll just shut the door there, and I'm going to take you over to trench two. Now, we're coming slightly down the slope, and trench two is right on the edge of the flat land of Garden Field. It's right on the edge of the slope. Here we come into the fencing around trench two, slightly quieter gate there. And now you can see here what we're dealing with trench two. It is a tricky area. It's been put here because there were several geophysical anomalies, weak magnetic blobs, and that is what we're trying to characterise. That is the point of trench two. And it has been scraped and scraped and scraped by volunteers within an inch of its life. And finally, it's got Justin, the site director, who's working here, trying to sort it all out. How's it going, Justin?
Very well, thank you.
I see that you're on the bit of natural here that is causing problems because it's very soft and it's difficult to trowel, and you're trying to get rid of the plough furrows so we can see absolutely everything that's underneath.
Yes. Yeah, we're getting there. We're almost at the right level for photo cleaning so we can see what we have.
Fantastic. Now, photo cleaning is where we clean it absolutely perfectly so that there's no mess at all on it, and it looks like the most beautiful slice of cake that you've ever seen. And we take a photograph from above. We'll probably take it with a drone. We used to take it with photo towers. And the problem is we've got to be able to see these red blobs that you can just see poking out through the plough furrows. We've got to be able to find out what they are. They are definitely the geophysical anomalies, but what they actually mean in terms of archaeology, we are still a bit baffled by. But anyway, enough from Trench 2. Where are you, Martin?
In the trench at the moment is a line of people crouching down in high vis. They've all got trowels, they've got shovels, they've got buckets. These are our volunteers who are working here, ably assisted by Madeline and by Jules. And I wonder if I can just have a quick chat with a few of them. Hello, what's your name?
Hi, I'm Rondi Danforth. I'm here from America. I really like active archaeology. I always thought when I first started volunteering that it was sort of like active history. I really like that. And I've really been fascinated with this period of history for years and years, although I haven't been a professional archaeologist.
Brilliant. Well, keep up the good work. Carry on. I'll leave you to it. Let me move further down the line. Now, I've got to be very careful about where I'm standing because this is a proper archaeological trench that I am in. Hello, what's your name?
Hello, my name's Laura Tovey. I've come over here from Wales, but actually I was born in Woodbridge, so this is an important site for me because I love archaeology, so it's nice to come back home to do a bit of volunteering here.
A proper personal connection then for you to this place. What does it mean to be here and genuinely being in the dirt working on uncovering a real archaeological site?
A privilege, just an absolute privilege. When we turned up this morning and realised there was just four of us volunteering, and that for me was that we'd been picked out of a huge amount of people. We had to keep pressing on the National Trust site to try to get the ticket to do this, and to be able to get it and both of us be able to do it together is fantastic. So it's just, yeah. Oh my goodness, Sutton who? What more can I say, Sutton who?
I know. Well, this is it, isn't it? You just have to say the name and you get an idea of just the scale of it and the privilege that it is to be here. So who are you here with?
This is my husband, Alex, yeah.
Alex, hello.
Hello.
How is it going then? Explain to me what you're doing.
Just slowly scraping back the dirt.
What sort of instruction have you been given? Because Madeline is over there who's been helping with the sort of making sure you know what you're doing and you know how to handle the trowel and everything like that. So what are you kind of looking for as you scrape with your trowel there?
Pretty much anything, you know, whatever's been turned up, because obviously we're still in the plough soil right now, aren't we? But yeah, Madeline's been a great help, especially considering I've never done this before.
I feel like you've been told not to stand on the yellow sand because it's so soft. We've been told to get rid of the darker sand, which is the plough soil, to take us down to the sand that then they think's going to have something in it. So we've been told to look out for dark spots of charcoal. We've been told to look for very soft, light-coloured, sandy stuff, which could be bone. And we've been told to look for flint. So flints is the thing that they particularly worked flint. So we've been shown lots of different flints and what the bulbs might look on it after they've been hit. So the percussion table at the top of it. So we're looking for things like that, really. So we chucked a flint in that bag there, which was quite exciting. We don't think it's necessarily the right thing, but a potential find is quite exciting. So
I think you're definitely doing the right thing, but then I know nothing about it, but you're being very, very well looked after with Time Team and all the archaeologists that are here helping you. So I'll let you carry on your work as I now try and very carefully, Helen, make my way out of this trench.
Thank you, Martin. Well, I'm here on the side of the trench, the other side of the trench, with Jules Gico, who's one of the field archaeology specialists, the FAS team at Sutton Hoo. And Jules, we were at York together, weren't we? I was doing my PhD, you were an undergraduate.
Yes, we were.
Yeah, and you've worked with Justin and Martin and Madeline quite a lot since then. You're kind of coming back for a bit of nostalgia.
I am. Lots of memories and lots of digging over the years on various sites.
So our troweling line is about, it's just over halfway down the trench now. They seem to me to be doing pretty well. This looks like a horizon where we can see colours. How are you reading it?
Definitely, they're doing very well. So we sprayed it this morning and the water has brought out all the colours. And as we're troweling back and taking off the worst of the loose and taking off the lumps and bumps, we can really start to see the remainders of the plough furrows coming through. We can see patches where it looks like natural subsoil, and we can see some sort of fairly amorphous, darker splodges, which hopefully with a bit more troweling might turn out to be something with a shape, or something that we can have a look at once it's all been properly troweled and photographed later.
Hello everybody, sorry I am back. I've made my way around. I was very, very careful. I'm so nervous about tripping over something.
Not just that, but this surface is very soft, isn't it? And you've got to treat it like a fragile Persian rug.
I have a question, and this is going to be Martin's stupid question of the day, if that's all right. A few times I've heard it referred to this thing called a natural. You know, we're trying to find the natural. What's a natural? What is that?
So it'll be the natural geology of the area. So you'll have a bedrock at some point, and on top of that we'll have the natural geology, whether that's been deposited by glaciers or by rivers. We will have features dug through it, so you'll be able to clean down to the natural sand and you'll see cut features cut through that or deposits on top.
What we mean is that the things that aren't natural are evidence of humans. The natural is something that underlies everything that no human has ever interacted with.
The volunteers are busy working then, trying to find this natural and work back to it. What happens next, Jules? What are they working towards with this trench that we're in at the moment?
Here, we are trying to keep a fairly flat surface. It's a bit of an artificial horizon, a cleaning level. So we've taken off the lumps. They are doing a trowel to try and banish any more lumps. Then we will return to the top and do a really lovely, clean photo trowel back. And it'll be photographed by the drone. Any features will be planned and referred back to that initial geophysics plan to compare whether any targets or potential features found on that relate to what we actually see on the ground.
One of the things that's slightly tricky about this trench, even this year's one, is that we've got features that are near the water pipe, the service trench, that got completely blitzed out by the geophysics because that 1-inch thick iron pipe produced such a strong geophysical response that you couldn't see anything else. It just, the glare meant that you couldn't see anything else. So we've got this ring ditch, which was a surprise last year, and the fact that we can see it at such a much higher level this year is also a surprise. We're looking at features, colours against the natural. Down the other end where the ring ditch is, we're looking at a ring ditch against an old soil. So the colours are completely different. And that's what makes Sutton Hoo different, and a sand site different to other places, that it's all on the colour, isn't it, Jules?
Yeah, you really have to very much get your eye in and work out what's going on.
Two cremation burials then that we know about in this site. What are we still, Jules, hoping to find here? What does this tell us about the sort of area that this would have been?
The hope is that we would find more, and there have been a few scatterings of sherds of pottery as we've been cleaning back. It could just be a bit of pottery that's been dislodged by the plough. If we haven't got cremations so much in a cut and they are at a higher level, we've potentially lost quite a few. It would be nice to find a few more, and there's definitely patches of charcoal in some areas, and there have been some pottery spreads.
This pottery is really soft, isn't it?
Yes. So
it could have disappeared completely, couldn't it?
It could have, and it is crumbly, and there's a few bits that it does sort of smear. If you do rub it a bit, it does smear away. So time will tell as we clean back over this area.
Thank you very much, Jules. Right, we'll let you get on with what you're doing at the moment. Give her a big round of applause, everybody. Right, thank you, audience. I'm going to leave you, and Helen, I'm going to leave you just for a moment because I'm going to disappear through the gate because I want to have a little look around the dome. This is the Time Team Dome. Here we go. Leaving the trench site now. Close the door behind me. And I'm going to be walking into the dome here. This is where you can come at Sutton Hoo if you want to find out a little bit more about some of the stuff we're doing, but also get hands-on with some activities. Great for children, and we've got lots of people from Time Team helping out here as well. There's Oh, it's busy here in the dome today. Lots of people enjoying themselves. And here we go. We're at some of the things. What have you got there? Oh, it's a penny. Well done. You've got a penny. Hi, Penny.
Hi, Martin.
All right. That's a penny in your penny.
I'm a penny as well.
Very good. What's going on here in the dome then?
Well, Emily got in touch with me a few weeks ago and said, could I come up with some activities to run during half-term holiday?
Emily, our director, yes, and you have done that. So you've got that, and you found some bone as well. Amazing. Lots of children here enjoying finding things in trays of sand. So this is them getting to do some archaeology.
Absolutely. All the artifacts in there are real. They come in, drink them back. There's everything from Roman to Victorian. They can clean them up and have a good look at them through the magnifying glass. So we had the excavation trays here. Simon has got the rubbish quiz about how long the rubbish takes to disintegrate, which is quite an eye-opener. And then we've got Ivan over there is doing an activity around poo, which is causing a lot of amusement, I can tell you.
I'm sure it is. Well, I do need to know more about that, I think. So I'm going to leave you to the sound pit. What have you found? What have you found? Oh, wow, you found some pottery. Brilliant. And you found some, is that some bone? What's that?
Clay pipe bowls.
Oh, it's some clay pipes. Very nice. Keep up the good work. Ivan, hello. Nice
hello,
to see
Martin,
you.
Hello, Martin. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. You're surrounded by plastic bags of what looks like poo.
We've got all different examples of different peoples of Britain, if you like, over the ages. So we've got Roman poo, and we've got Anglo-Saxon poo, and we've got Viking poo. So, Martin, do you want to squeeze some poo?
I thought you'd never ask. Yeah, so I'm squeezing the bag now. Oh... What am I looking for here?
So some of the examples of the things that you might find there, they're very small. So there's something, look, that I think that could be a grain. Also, what else have we got there?
This is so horrible.
Yeah, we've got some, that might be a little stone. So grains and stones means it's an Anglo-Saxon poo. So when the Anglo-Saxons were making bread, they used quern stones to grind up the grains to make flour, but bits of stone would come off and make its way eventually into the bread. And obviously they couldn't digest the stones, so there's only one thing that could happen to them. They came out the bottom end.
Yeah, and then you find it in their remains, which weirdly smell a little chocolatey for some reason, yeah. Ivan. I can't possibly know why. Anyway, I'll leave you to your bags of poo. Thank you, Ivan. Thank you, Penny, here in the dome, doing very good work. Our fantastic time team volunteers helping to spread the joy of archaeology. So this is what you can do if you come down to Sutton Hoo, especially if you've got children, they're going to love this, finding out a lot more about what we're doing, getting hands on in the Time Team Dome.
Now, we've had several visitors here at Sutton Hoo, and among them has been Tim Fitzhyam. Now, Tim is the project manager and an archaeologist behind the St George's Guildhall project in King's Lynn. That's the longest continuously used theatre in the British Isles, so it's an amazing project he's doing to renovate and restore it. Now, you may also, if you're an avid watcher of the Time Team Classics, you may also remember Tim Fitzhyam for his spectacular success in building a boat made out of paper and rowed by two dried fish made into oars. He is a man of many parts, and so we sat him down for a chat to find out all about King's Lynn Guildhall.
It's the largest area of 15th century timber floor we think anywhere in the UK. It's a huge floor, not just a thick, really thick, solid construction. Some of these beams are half a metre squared, but it's also a vast area. It's about the size of a tennis court, maybe even slightly larger than that. It's slightly magical to look at. It's incredible.
And now you've taken out all the seats, all the theatre seats from the 1950s, were
and
they?
60s, yeah.
And 60s. Yeah. And you're treating those like archaeological objects, aren't
yes,
you?
Yes, we are. Yes. Yes,
goodness
we are.
Knows the size of yes. your Fynes hut. It must be absolutely
yes,
enormous.
It's a big one, yes.
But tell me about what's going to happen with the... There are joists that are on top of these giant floorboards that are supporting the later floor. And are you taking the joists off as well?
So we've taken a selective approach to that. Archaeologically, if the joists are obscuring areas of particular interest, then we are removing the later joists. If they're not, then we're leaving them where they are. This gives us a really good way of being able to move the project forward, get the theatre back up and running, because of course it's an important theatre, but also not hurt the medieval floor. But the discoveries in the floor are incredible, really, and they're rewriting what we know about guild history, and they're rewriting what we know about theatre history, and many other things as well. But those two key areas, I think we've now proved conclusively that guild halls could be subdivided temporarily, which I don't think anyone really ever knew before. So you could rent out different spaces in the guild hall itself for different purposes to different people at the same time.
So Tim, what's the plan then with the guild hall and the work that you're doing with the floor? I know that it needs to be restored to a working theatre, but in the meantime, are people able to experience some of the work you're doing and the things you're uncovering?
Yes, 100%. And this is, it's really kind of you to have me on the podcast today, because we've got a really limited period where we're going to open this up to the general public to come and see this incredible find that's sitting there in King's Lynn, this wonderful floor. We're opening it from the 27th of May to the 31st of July this year. And that's a really short window, a sort of once in a lifetime experience in many ways for people that love archaeology. It's a short window because, of course, we are still trying to get the construction done to put it back to being a theatre. And at the moment, we are hoping to get construction on site from the 31st of July. So it's a really special find that people should come and see. And we're going to have interpretation boards, and hopefully our guides will be there to answer questions and talk to people about it.
The floor covers, obviously, the entire guild hall.
Yep.
Just about.
Yep.
Where are the visitors going to be? Because you can't walk on it. I know in theory you can walk on it. It's not going to break.
No.
But having visited relatively recently,
yes,
I can see that because there's so much you can see in the colour of this beautifully clean surface. It's just like at Sutton Hoo. You need to make a beautifully clean surface to be able to see all the detail. And you've got that clean surface now. You can't let people walk on it.
No. So what I've done since you were there, Helen, is I've built two viewing platforms. So I got really overexcited about everybody getting to see it. So a bit like at Sutton Hoo, where you've got a giant tower,
yes,
and people can look down on the mounds. It's not quite that extreme, but I have built quite a high level viewing platform so people can look down on the floor.
So you can
above.
Come up the stairs,
yep,
and where you would have come into the top of the auditorium,
yep,
that's where the viewing platform's
going to be. Absolutely right.
So you're going to get a fantastic view all across, all along
all the
guild hall,
yeah,
right up to where the various stages, yep, have been.
Yeah, that's right.
Brilliant.
And that's the other sort of area of finds that we've made, which is just really exciting, is we've got a real sequence of stages and a real sequence of theatres coming out. So we've got our 1766 playhouse layout, which we know about, and we've got a model showing that on the site. But we've also now got a previous layout, a fixed playhouse, 1747, which is the earliest in the country. We've then got the shadow of an earlier one than that, and an earlier one than that, and an earlier one than that. And we keep getting back until you get back to the Minstrel's Gallery, which of course was there in 1400 and was the entertainment space in 1400. So you've got this remarkable sequence of theatrical fittings and fixtures that take you through the very earliest phases of drama in English history, right in one room, which is tremendously exciting.
And I quite like the idea as well, and I don't know why, it's just sort of in your head, archaeology is always a thing outside, you know, like we have behind us here, with people in all weathers. But this is indoor archaeology.
Indoors,
as well,
and
isn't
upstairs.
It?
Indoors, it's the best part.
Upstairs, absolutely. Tim, thank you so much for coming, and enjoy the rest of your day at Sutton Hoo.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me on.
This is the Time Team podcast with me, Helen Geek, and you, Martin Williams.
And me, Martin Williams, yes. And we're right next to Trench 1. You can just about hear in the background the volunteer diggers, the trowlers. They're working away, still doing a fantastic job. And we have our audience with us as well. Hello, audience!
Yay!
They are still here enjoying the sunshine that we've been blessed with today. And Helen, the time has come to put your thinking cap on, because right. here come the questions.
Okay.
And these are from our Patreon supporters. Thank you so much, by the way, if you do support us on Patreon. We really couldn't do any of this without you. And one of the many things that you get, in addition to the stuff that you might get with the podcast, but also on YouTube, is the ability to ask Helen a question on the podcast. And so many of you have done that. Let me start with this from Justin Freeman, who says, "Hi, Helen. I think archaeology has a powerful role in telling the stories of ordinary folk that written history often overlooks." This is music to your ears,
yeah,
I think,
yeah.
Helen. "Sutton Hoo clearly has a lot of high status and royal links, but what do you think the archaeology can do to help us understand the lives of more ordinary Anglo-Saxon people?" Great question.
Yeah, Justin, that is a really brilliant question, and you're absolutely right. Archaeology is the kind of counterpart to history, because people who are famous and well-known and appear in records are the people who make their way into history. People who live a life that is unrecorded, just a quiet and ordinary life, don't make their way into history, but they do make their way into archaeology. We all make an imprint on the earth during our life. We all leave behind our rubbish. So yes, archaeology is ideally about the ordinary everyday person. But here we are at Sutton Hoo, with kings, with mounds, with golds, with ivory, with splendiferous extraordinariness. And we can't really get away from that. I mean, you're not going to say, "Well, I'm not going to even try to look at this because that's what history should do." Because we're in a period where archaeology has to be used to help the history along. We just don't have enough history. Archaeology tells us the real story. History tells us what they wanted to have remembered about them, perhaps. But it's more than just that. When we're looking at the archaeology of the elite, the people who could control resources, we're also looking at the archaeology of the people who did the work for them. So all of the mounds of the mound cemetery, like pyramids, are built by presumably ordinary people. Now, I say presumably because we did in the 1980s pick apart Mound 2 very minutely to see if we could work out whether the mound had been built by people coming to the funeral, each bringing a basket of earth maybe, or if it had been made by slave labour maybe, or if it had been made in some other way. And what we just discovered is it's a huge mound of amorphous barrow loads. It's just a big spoil heap. We decided we couldn't really tell anything about how it was built. So we didn't find out about the ordinary people of Sutton Hoo there either. But what we did do as well at the mound cemetery, and what we're hoping to do here as well, is we found out about another thing, which was the Bronze Age landscape underneath. So we managed to get a sneaky look at Bronze Age life, and we found out a great deal about that, because as you can imagine, underneath a big mound, the preservation is absolutely lovely. So we've got one of the best preserved Bronze Age settlements in Suffolk under our mounds at Sutton Hoo. While here we may be looking for the story of the elites, we've always got to remember that they're propped up by the ordinary people underneath, who are, after all, paying for them. And we're also finding out about the ordinary life that's lived around, before, after, and so on.
Justin, a brilliant question. Thank you so much. Let's move on to one from Sherry Bradshaw, who says, "Hello from Texas." Hello, Sherry. Helen, were you a part of the team who excavated the sand bodies in the Sutton Hoo burial ground? Also, would people at that time have been aware it was a royal burial ground? Well, let's get the first bit out of the way first. Did you excavate the sand bodies?
No, I didn't.
And you're a bit annoyed about that.
Yes. In 1986, Martin Carver came to talk to my year at UCL, where I was doing medieval archaeology. And he said, "If you sign up for more than 3 weeks, you stand a good chance of being able to dig a sand body." And so I signed up for 5 weeks, thinking, surely. But that year, I spent most of my time unpicking Mound 2. And there weren't any graves on Mound 2. So I never did get my own sand body.
Can you just explain, what is a sand body?
Okay, well, if you have a very acidic soil like our sand here, it's a little bit like the environment in a peat bog. The acid not only eats away at the bones, but it also weirdly kind of preserves the skin and the flesh. Not as well as a peat bog. The body shrinks, but the flesh becomes hard and brown. And you can excavate it like a kind of sculpture. You gently peel away the grave fill and you have a body, not bones, but a body. Occasionally there's a little bit of bone in there, so sometimes you've got enough organic matter for carbon dating. But essentially, rather like the ship, the wood is replaced by a different colour sand. in a burial, the human body is replaced by a different coloured and textured sand.
Wow, so that must be such a delicate thing to do. Let's just get to the final bit of Sherry's question, because I think this is the most interesting. Would people at the time have been aware that it was a royal burial ground?
I think that they must have been. So the earliest of the sand bodies dates to either the 7th or the early 8th century. Maybe you could push it maybe as late as the late 8th century, but it's a carbon date, so it's a date range. It could be as early as the 7th century. It doesn't have to be anything earlier than the later 8th. So we know that the mounds stopped being used in about 650, and the sand bodies could have been, the first one could have been put in about the same time. What you can hear there...
I was going to say, can I just stop you? Because something really exciting is going on here.
Yes.
A great big tank has turned up, full of water. There's a bowser. There's Justin pulling a hose like a firefighter from it, reeling this huge hose. And then the end of the hose is going into the trench. So what's happening here, Helen? Helen's now trying to help.
I'm trying to untangle trying to help. This is the hose pipe, which is carrying water from the bowser to spray the site. So Richard has got the other end, and he's got a spray nozzle on, and it's a very fine spray nozzle, which is sprayed up high to simulate rain, essentially, a very soft rain. A heavy rain would... the drips make a hole in the sand. It's that fragile. So there goes the generator. Richard's now spraying up into the air and getting his fine spray, and off he goes. Yes, really fine. See the kind of rainbows that are coming up with that.
Yeah. So that is now just dampening the surface.
Not just dampening the surface. You've got to be able to scrape that washed surface off. The surface, and at least another inch, it'll have to go down.
Well, I didn't expect that was going to happen today. Well, hopefully that's given you a bit of idea.
I've got more to say, Sherry, because one thing we didn't explain is what these sand bodies are, why they're different. And why they're different is because they're in funny positions. They're all wrong. Some of them are face downwards. Some of them have their hands and feet tied. Some of them have their head cut off. Sometimes the head has been removed from the grave. Sometimes the head's been put on their chest. Sometimes they're all tied up, you know, folded up and bound. They're all wrong. And what they fit into is a class of burial called an execution burial. And they're normally 10th and 11th century, and they are linked to the beginning of judicial execution, when we have capital punishment and the bodies are buried in a separated burial ground. From Sutton Hoo onwards, they're buried in a separated place. And this separated place is in two places at Sutton Hoo. One is around Mound 5, and the other one is slightly further out, just on the edge of the Mound Cemetery. Around Mound 5, that is the reason why I think they must have been aware of what was going on in the mounds, because Mound 5 is not the largest, it's not the smallest, it's right in the middle, and it's the first. And given that they were there within a generation or so, and they were deliberately focusing around the earliest mound, they must have known that that mound was extra significant. And so my story, if you like, that I tell about this in my head...
Shall we move slightly? Yes, we're about to get wet, so let's just... getting wet. The story you tell.
Yeah, the story that I think, the most plausible story to tell about this, is that you have Mound 5, and Mound 5 sets off a royal burial ground that culminates in Mounds 2 and 1 with their ships in them. This is the place of the people of power. And one of the things that the people of power can do is they have power of life and death over you. They have power to execute you for a real or imagined misdemeanor. And to show how much power they have, they can command that you be killed and buried in their place. This is the place of their power. You are somebody that they can command not just to be killed, but also to be buried there. That's what I think.
It captures the imagination, doesn't it? What a great question. Thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you for all the Patreon questions that we've had sent in to us. You can get involved in the community, and there is a proper little community going on now of people who are asking questions, and then some people sort of get involved in answering ones that have been put up there. It's all for you on Patreon. Patreon facebook.com/timeteamofficial. And if you go there now, by the way, there's a little something extra from Helen and I, because earlier on today, we went down to Riverview, which is sort of way off in the distance and is another part of this vast site here at Sutton Hoo. And we explain the significance of that, and we take you on a little tour. We've got a little electric gator, a little buggy, that we went for a tour of this whole site in. The whole thing is available for you to see, including a site tour of where we are right now on Patreon. It is really worth having a look at. So thank you so much for supporting us on Patreon. Do keep those questions coming in. Our next episode will be our final one, we think, from Sutton Hoo. So we're really looking forward to bringing you that. And I'm looking forward to coming back here and doing this all over again. We're having a great time here.
We are. Let's just hope the weather holds, though.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for joining us. And thank you for the crowd as well who've been here at Sutton Hoo. And thank you for listening to the Time Team podcast. Bye-bye. Yay!
Hello, America. It's your new favourite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two-fourths of the British podcast No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.